We're here today again with Mike Gaynor, running for mayor on an independent line. And the thing I want to talk about today is sort of clarify the streets and sanitation, public works stuff. One of the things that every single candidate has agreed on from the beginning is, things like potholes, the way the city functions actually physically for the people that live here, trash removal, a lot of these kind of things came up. So today, what I want to get into is understanding the system itself. Mm-hmm. And because I think that what's clear is it's not just about like guys going out and filling potholes, but it's like, how do we fix the whole system that gets us to the point where people are, you know, replacing their front end every year.
Right.
So, I'm going to kind of outline the way I understand the things work, and then I'd like to hear from you, if I'm correct or if not, or what are some of the things that you want to try and understand that is also kind of murky, and then get into some of the details of this, and I'll let you lead the way on the details. So there's really three departments here. There's the streets department, sanitation, and public works. And what's interesting to me when I started looking at it is it seems like they're all kind of overlapped, kind of a mishmash of who does what. So the streets department does street sweeping, snow plowing, bulk trash. They cut all the grass on the city-owned lots. They pick up the leaves in the fall, and they pick up the Christmas trees. And then the sanitation department does the weekly garbage pickup. They do recycling, but that's actually contracted out.
Yeah.
And then composting, which is also actually composted out. And there is the pick and pay. I don't know who actually manages that. There is a composting location. And electronics drop-off, which I understand both have now closed to the public.
That's correct.
Well, let me just finish up here. I believe in theory the user fee is supposed to cover the cost of the services of the weekly garbage pickup.
Mm-hmm.
And then public works, and they do some other stuff too, but for the topic today, what public works does is they're the ones that are actually out filling the potholes or supposed to be, and they fix light poles, but not the actual lights, because that's a National Grid job. So I guess what I want to start with is, like, I look at this and it seems to be totally confusing. Does this actually make sense? Or how do we start to, like, pick this apart? And
well, I mean, I think a lot of the questions that you have are questions that I've shared and frustrations I've shared, just in my day-to-day operations, working at the street level, at the community level, at the organizational level, and trying to understand, like, even who you call at any one point to get the services that you need. And, you know, everybody says to eliminate the confusion, I think they direct you towards 311, right? They just say, call 311. And 311 tends to have this schematic as to which kind of call goes to which person in City Hall. And I think that's helpful for the everyday person. But when we're talking about big picture planning and strategy and efficiencies and how to do the work that we're doing better, like, it really is my job to understand. And I think that part of it is educating the public too. But my job as a leader to figure out and understand how and what is being done by whom, and trying to figure out where the efficiencies lie, where there's opportunity to save costs or innovate to decrease our expenditures and our costs while also delivering the greatest service to the people on the streets. I had the great privilege on the east side for many years of just having a direct line to Henry Jackson, who was the person that just got it done when it came to public works. If we were doing a cleanup, if somebody had illegally dumped, if there was a problem, we would call him and he would take care of it. And I think that it was a very efficient service. We didn't have to burden anybody at 311. And I'm not, proposing that, but it was a shortcut. you know, and it was a direct line to someone that could get the job done in a very efficient way. And I think that that's what my strategy is how, you know, we cut out a lot of the middle people and we figure out what is the shortest, most direct path to get things done in the neighborhood. And I think that that's where I'm always thinking. I'm a contractor, so I'm a very, and I'm also a very systematic thinker in terms of, you know, how we get things done. I'm somebody that thinks holistically about training and how we can cross-train people to ensure that we're getting things done efficiently. And then finally, I'm trying to think big picture about how we address challenges that aren't just physical in nature at the streets, but are also social in nature. So my whole initiative called City Action Corps, where we're going to train and mentor young people while also getting this meaningful work done at the neighborhood level, cleaning up streets, planting trees, you know, maintaining vacant lots, doing it in a way that adds value to the neighborhood and builds our capacity and the social capacity to improve our city. And it shouldn't be a confusing thing. I think if you pull over and talk to any city council member, they're going to have the same, they're going to be asking the same questions that we're asking, right? But it is a lot. I mean, if you think about it and you go through the budget and you look at all the pages, right? There's engineering. So that's thinking about planning and how we do things better. There's when you close down a street for a parade or an event or a block party, that's public works. If somebody knocks over a street pole when they're moving into their house, right? And all of a sudden there's a hazard there, you know, that's public works. You know, in the wintertime, we think about, you know, obviously the removal of snow and potholes, and those are the things that seem to be most tangible. But I think that there's a lot of things. Parks, you know, there's little parks all over the city. Who maintains those? And then there's the Olmsted Parks, and what's the overlap and the collaboration there? Which parks does the city maintain? Which does Olmsted Parks maintain? So, and then the question is, are we doing everything that we can to collaborate with all of the people that are trying to make this city work? And I think that, you know, many of my predecessors and probably many of my opponents are just content to enter this system and just continue it the way that it's always been. And I think that we need to not start over, but we need to kind of reimagine how things get done here and ask the question, can it be done a better way? Because that's where I think we start this conversation is, and how I'm going to spend the 3 months from November until I'm inaugurated is talking every day and spending every day before the job starts, trying to figure out exactly what those numbers that are in the budget mean and who is the person that is accountable for each of those positions. Because I think that we're doing a lot, but there's so much room for improvement. And I look at the numbers and they're daunting and they're big and there's a lot of people on payroll, but are all of those people contributing in the most efficient way to direct a quality service and to make what needs to happen in the city happen every day? And those are the questions we're here to ask.
And I think, so to me, like, so if we pick one of these things, like mm-hmm. this, you know, just one of them. What I see when I make a list like this is that inefficiency is built into the system. Mm-hmm. And so that we can complain about like individuals not doing their job or whatever, this and that, which to me it becomes kind of irrelevant mm-hmm. because if if you can't ask people to operate efficiently in an inefficient system. Mm-hmm. And so how do we actually, like, how do we reimagine this? Like, I looked at just out of, you know, quickly to look up, like, what does the sanitation department do in New York City?
Right.
And they do everything that you would expect a sanitation department to do, which is, for us, is spread over like at least 3 different departments.
Right, right.
And so that's the kind of like, how do you, I guess, for lack of a better word, break a system, but break it to rebuild it?
Right. And I think that, you know, it, I, you know, I have so many different thoughts, because I, you know, when you think of sanitation, you think it, you know, how to keep the city clean and how to improve it. It's, and, you know, how to maintain it. It's, it is not, like you said, it's not multiple departments. This is just the mission of one department or one group of people that are empowered with that. And there already is some communication there, but you know, I think you start with all of the people right now that are responsible for those departments, and you bring them into a room, and you start having some sharing, and you put, you know, I talk about this every day, is putting people and communities in the driver's seat of decision making. Like when I talked to Henry Jackson, you know, over a coffee.
And so
just, he was the previous, Henry Jackson was the previous, he worked in public works for many, many years on the East Side. He worked, he started out the very ground level and worked himself up through the ranks. And even as someone that was kind of a lead player over there, I don't even know what his title was, but he was, you know, he oversaw many staff in public works, the plowing crews, the potholes and that kind of thing. But just have sitting with him for an hour and just asking him questions, probing for how things could be better, you know, talking about, that was one person. Now, if we bring in other people that may be retirees or maybe in the current system, and we just have a conversation about what works and what doesn't work. I'm not going to, it's like, it's the same as the leader, the mayor coming into a neighborhood and claiming that you know what's best for that neighborhood, and now we're going to do this. I've never approached things from that perspective. I'm going to go to those neighborhoods and say, what do you envision for this neighborhood? What are the most dramatic needs, right? But do people go to those division chiefs of all of those departments and say, you know, we're not doing very well. We've got to do better, or we need to figure out how to cut costs over the next 10 years. You know, where are the inefficiencies? What holds you up from doing your job better? You got to know that there are people that have things to say about everybody. In every workplace in America, there are people that have critiques and criticisms of how their company works and how you do your job. So we have to start there. We have to start with the people that are on the street level. I have stopped my sanitation worker. He's been on the force for 26, 28 years. He has never been full-time. He has never been a full-time staff person. They always, he either gets laid off or he's somehow, they've played with it so that he is not a full-timer. But he has so many insights in terms of how the trash is actually picked up in this city and where there are places, what we can do as a city to improve that process or improve that system. And I think that that's where we need to start. We need to start with the people that are doing the work, the people at the ground level. And I think that you do them in separate meetings. You have the people that are working every day in the trenches, and then you have the administrators, and then you compare notes, because I think that would be a really interesting conversation. Right? To just see from the manager level what people believe are the strengths and the weaknesses. And then you go down to the workers that are doing it every day and you figure out what the strengths and the weaknesses are. And also, and I said this, it's an audit. Yeah, part of it is a financial audit, but part of it is just like, what do you view your goal or your role and responsibility to be? And what's preventing you from doing that better? Or what do you think you're doing really great? I mean, I think that there's probably a lot of people that think they're doing, you know, certain things really well. And I think that there's a lot of knowledge and wisdom to glean from that as well. But we have to start with the people that do the work every day. And then we compare the notes of all of these things and try to figure out and problem solve where there's overlap, where there's inefficiency, and where it can be more streamlined to do things, you know, better.
One thing you brought up there that I want to jump back on because it surprised me. So this sanitation worker that's not full-time and has been there 26 years or whatever. So I thought that was something that only happened in, like, if you were, you know, worked at one of these, you know, giant corporations that wanted to make sure that you stayed on, you know, public benefits and stuff mm-hmm. like that, so they didn't have to pay your health insurance. But so that happens at City Hall.
I've heard it directly from people on the street. So I don't know. I mean, I don't. He has no reason to lie to me. I'm just a normal resident on the street that talks to had talked to him for years. And because I was also curious, like, why are we paying overtime for sanitation? Why are we paying overtime for plowing? Because the way that my father used to run it is that there was a first, a second, and a third shift. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people, and often the entry-level folks, would work second shift because they're not the most desirable, or third shift jobs. And, you know, his response to me was, well, we can't get enough people to work second shift, so the first shift guys pick up the overtime. And I'm just like, really? You can't get enough people to work second shift or third shift? Like, for me, it's just like, I don't really believe that that's the case. Like, yes, they're not the most desirable jobs, but city jobs are coveted jobs. Like, these are good jobs for the most part. Their benefits, you know, once you work into it, they're relatively good paying jobs. You have a good quality of life doing it. And you may not love the job description per se, but you have opportunities to move into different positions and do different things once you have your foot in the door and you really prove yourself. So I think part of it is, you know, it comes back to this conversation that I have many, many times about us building capacity as a city, because I've struggled with finding workers too. But I also know that if I invest time and energy into people, then I can build my capacity as a company. And if I treat people really well, we went to a 4-day work week at my company because after COVID, people were really wanting either more money or more time. And with the interest of retaining people, because when you retain people, you maintain that institutional knowledge, that experience, that investment of training that you had. I listened to people and I figured I want these people back. I want them to be here. I want them to feel happy. We went to a 4-day work week for most of our employees in the company. So we work Monday through Thursday. They work 9-hour days. They get paid for 40. And then they have a 3-day work week. And let me tell you, it transformed the culture. But it came about because I was willing to think outside of the box about how to improve work culture. And I think that thinking outside of the box, listening to the people that do the work every day, trying and having a willingness to do things different, like, that is where you start that conversation. Because we need to retain the people that we have. The people that we do retain, we want them to be happy and joyful and feel grateful to come to work, because then they're going to have more pride in their job. They're going to want to share their learning with more people that they work with every day. And overall, the system gets stronger. So it's just by investing in people, listening to people, caring about people. All of the administrative stuff, all of the managerial stuff, yeah, there's lots of room, but I don't understand it enough to know where we go there. But I know that when you invest in people, it improves the overall quality of the workplace and the quality of the work that's mm-hmm. done, and the way that it appears at the ground level and how it's experienced by our neighbors.
So and that's exactly what concerns me about hearing that there's, you know, that there's part-time people in these positions, because one of the things that municipal work does, what it offers, is, yes, you might not, you're not going to make as much money as if you did something else in the private sector, or you started your own business, or did something that had, you know, A, more risk, but potentially more reward. But these were historically throughout the 20th century in America, like, reasonably well-paying middle-class jobs that help build the middle class, but what they really offer is long-term stability.
Right, exactly.
And so if you're keeping people in part-time positions long-term, that doesn't help with any of that. One of the other things I'm curious about this, and I don't know if you know, but, you know, so the police department has their own union, the fire department has their own union. Where do the unions fall for the rest of city employees?
Well, there are other public service unions that are, but I don't know. Again, I'm not really clear on how all of those those unions come into play when it comes to these folks, you know, that are doing the real work, the physical work, the work that we always, right, are critical of when things aren't going well. Like the folks that are in the trenches, the folks that do the heavy lifting, like all of those expressions that we talk about, the ones that really make the city work. And I think that if we really are committed to strengthening the core of the city, like we need to listen to those people and invest in those people. And I don't know the status of those public service unions as it relates to the blue and even the white collar workers, like when you look at your inspector class at the city hall and that type of thing. But it's obvious to me, and this is without speaking directly to the exact issue, that across the board, our city will benefit by giving people a voice and by really listening to the contributions and the vision that they have for their own job, and then doing what we need to do to restructure and reconfigure to make sure that we're addressing those needs and helping them to do their job better. And that's how you start with rebuilding culture. I talk about it as, you know, a big picture, in terms of bringing together a team of professionals that are really committed. I don't have to, you know, you can look at the campaign numbers, campaign contribution numbers that have come out in recent days. Like, I don't need to reward people because they funded my campaign. I don't need to reward people with a job because they've been out there fighting for the party. I'm going to bring the best people to this city that are committed to this city, that believe in this city, that have the best ideas and the best experience and the best practices. And many of them are here. Many of them are already here on the outside looking in. But I think many of them we can bring from other places too, because they'll want to be part of something really transformative. So the first part is that leadership team, right? Those people that we identify as being experts in their field that can help us from a big picture strategy leadership perspective. But then we lean into the folks that have been doing the work every day. And then we try to connect the dots between best ideas, best vision, best leadership, and the folks that are making it happen each day to figure out how we actually improve service delivery, how we think outside of the box in terms of service delivery. Right now, we throw a lot away in the city. Maybe we'll get to this in the conversation. I remember when the city of Buffalo started their recycling program, right? And they actually had that it was going to cost money for the first couple of years, right? And it actually like far exceeded expectations and actually saved the city millions of dollars, because we weren't now disposing of that. We were recycling it. Now, recycling is different now, you know, particularly in the plastic world. You know, there are challenges to it with single stream. I think we've gotten away from being, you know, what the culture of recycling is about. So there's a lot of abuse of the recycling system. And I need to look at the numbers to see, you know, is it actually a net positive for the city? Or is it something that is a burden for our, employees and our workers? Is it a contract or a subcontracted service that actually it benefits the bottom line of the city? But I'll tell you something, if we can improve on that process and we can recycle more things, and when I say recycling, I also include what you talked about, which is composting. You know, there is an immense amount of potential and leveraging food waste in this city to generate a valuable resource and save millions in our user fee bill. Because yard waste and food waste, first of all, they add things that we don't need to be putting in the landfill, because that's anaerobic decomposition and it creates methane, goes in the atmosphere, and all that's bad too. But the other thing is just volume. And mass that's going into our landfills, that's a resource. You know, that's a resource that can be on a municipal level. When I was at Penn State, there was a municipal solid waste composting facility for as part of their waste system, you know, where they were actually composting raw sewage. So there was all these facilities and they compost it and they were testing it and doing all these different things. We're just talking about food waste here, but it's like 25% or 30%, I think, by mass of the food waste. It may be even higher than that. Don't quote me on that number. I should, because it actually seems low now. But if we could figure out how to leverage that resource and we divert that material that we're currently paying $100 a ton for, or $90 a ton now at Waste Management, whatever it is, at Ogden Street, then in creating a resource for greening and for horticultural production and for food production here in the city, I think that that's, it would be a major win. But we have to think about it on that grand scale and think about how we're currently doing it. I love Farmer Pirates and what they're doing, and I think it's a great pilot, and I think it needs to be expanded because I think that there's immense opportunity to do things differently when it comes to solid waste removal. So, yeah.
I want to get back to, because the composting thing I wanted to go back to anyway, and you started to touch on it. So there was this location on Seneca Street where there was a big pile of, you could take your yard waste. Mm-hmm. And you could drop off electronics. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's changed now, correct?
Yeah, as far as I know, well, I think you can still drop off electronics there, though it's a little iffy in terms of the quantity that you can take there. And, you know, it is a little bit more difficult. There was a spot that Get Her Done was operating, and they were taking all of the leaf waste, mm-hmm. all of the city's tree waste and yard waste, and then they were also composting there. So mostly tree waste and things like that, and then grinding it and mulching it. You could get mulch, you could get some kind of finished compost and stuff like that that all came from, you know, basically that. I heard that they did not have their contract renewed and that now you can't take material there. I actually know the owner of Get Her Done, and apparently all of a sudden, very abruptly, with very little communication and follow through, that contract was abandoned. And now apparently they've issued a new RFP. So I'm not current on what the status of that is now, but I do know that there's only a couple facilities that have licenses to do this type of composting in Western New York. So it was probably 15, 20 years ago, all of that compost and leaf waste used to go to Laredon Construction down on Lake Avenue in Blaisdell. But I was pretty encouraged by the fact that we had a hometown site that's doing composting here in Buffalo proper, and that there's employees that are created there, that there's a very accessible site. Because a lot of the problem that we see with like illegal dumping, for example, is that, because this is a great segue into that, how many times you drive across the East Side right now, there are TVs strewn all about the East Side, mm-hmm. all over. Monitors, TV screens, and then tires. Yep, like we got to make it easy, accessible, right, for people, because we're paying one way or the other, yep. You know? And if we don't have a site where people can easily take their electronics, and or if we don't have a site where people can easily, then we're paying people to clean it up. We're paying for it in depressed property values. We're paying for it in community pride and just the people's feeling that they're cared for. And I talk about it every day. Like, we need to embrace the philosophy of a culture of care where neighborhoods feel like they're heard, where their neighborhoods are respected, where they're taken care of by their city employees, where there's a vision for making the city better. Like, that's what I talk about every day. That is my first and most urgent priority. And if we aren't prioritizing that, then what are we doing? Like, that's my job as the mayor, is to surround myself with people that are committed to that culture of care. And that will reverberate through every staff employee. And we can be innovative about that. We can be creative about how we solve those problems as we understand them more thoroughly and as we listen to the people. And I think that that's where we have to start the conversation. We have to acknowledge that the way that we have done business for the last 20 years is ineffective. And that's not because there are incompetent people there. It's because of a deterioration of culture and leadership and accountability. And that starts right in the mayor's office. Right in the mayor's office. And that culture, that person, will set the tone for how business will be conducted and how we will get things done. And I've got a stack right now of 70 tires behind my warehouse. Because people know that that's just where you dump the tires. Yep. So it's like...
That's exactly what... I mean, that's... You made the point that I wanted to get to, which was that I find these kind of things like eliminating a spot where people can take their yard waste. You know, I've had to take tires in too that have been dumped. You know, it's $5 a tire.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have somebody drop off a whole pile of tires, not only do you have to... have a vehicle that can get them there,
right?
Or a bunch of TVs or whatever. And that's even the problem with a single TV. Like, what if you don't have a car?
Right, right.
And so you've got this old TV and you're moving, you know, what do you do with it? And what happens is oftentimes is it gets dumped in a vacant lot down the street. And
More often than not.
And so the reason is, like, not that that's a bad, that person is a bad person. Because we have to step back farther than that. But we've created a system where if you have anything other than the cardboard box from Amazon and your food scraps that you just throw it all in the garbage, then it's a real problem.
Yeah.
And so we wind up with this dumping across the city. So to me, the problem is, like, how do we create a system that makes these things work? And that's when I was looking at this breakdown of, like, all this overlap between these departments.
Right.
To me, it's just the physical structure tells us that this is not going to work.
It's not going to work. And this is where we have to, like, you know, just start anew. Because we have to, and the thing is, everybody think, well, when you do something new or you create this new program or you do this, it's going to cost more. And how are you going to pay for it? We are already paying. Right? Let's just acknowledge we are already paying, and we're paying too much, and we're still not doing what we need to do. There's still illegal dumping all over the east side because people don't have efficient ways. People got hundreds of gallons of paint sitting in their basement because there's not a place that you can take it. You know, we have people that are struggling to clear things out. I cleared out a vacant lot that used to be a community garden, and they'd used tires for many years as kind of planters and this and that. And the city had to decommission it, or Grassroots Gardens decommissioned it and turned the land back over to the city. So I had two dump trailer loads full of tires. I was on the phone for an hour and a half trying to find a place. And I ended up finding a place up in Niagara County to take the tires to get rid of them. But that's because I'm responsible and I was determined to find a place that I could legally get rid of the tires. Mm-hmm. And it came at a, you know, pretty great expense, but, you know, we were getting contracted to do it. So we did that. But there should be a one-stop shop, you know, and smaller municipalities do this. Mm-hmm. You know, smaller municipalities have, you know, some of them have, like, storage containers at the transfer stations. So when they bring in the dump trailer, you know, you can put things that are potentially reusable in the storage container, and then people come and they take those things if they need them. So their people are being innovative just by creating an infrastructure for it, creating a system, and then broadcasting that system to the city and to all of its residents, sharing that with our kids and our students, and having a whole culture of care curriculum in our public school system. Because the kids know. And then they're like, Mom, you can't, Dad, you can't throw those tires here. There's a place that you can go. And they do this. Or you teach them how to recycle. Oh, nope, you can't do that. We can't do plastic recycling anymore. Just put it in the trash because it actually costs us more. You know, the city started playing around with that. They had a funky little mascot. I don't remember what its name was when they first started recycling. But the point of the matter is it has to be a cultural shift, an educational shift, and then it has to be accessible and efficient and easy. Like, there should be a space where you take hazardous materials, mm-hmm. and we pay for it once. That's all. Because right now we're paying for it three or four times. We're paying for it, picking it up on the streets, cleaning it, disposing of it, putting it here, putting it there, you know, decreasing the valuation of our neighborhoods, all of those things. We're paying for it all over the place. It would be so simple to just take a big pole building and say, bring it all here and we'll deal with it. There's a great business model, actually. John Hannon started a recycling facility up in Tonawanda. I'm trying to remember the name of it now. He ended up selling the company to Casilla. But they took all construction and demolition waste. And what would happen is you'd take your there, you'd pay a tipping fee, they'd dump it out there. And then he had employees that sorted through it all, took out all the metal, took out all the wood, and then finally took out all of the things that had to go straight to the landfill. And he had a business model that was working, created jobs, was decreasing diversion, and was generating revenue because you can take the wood and mulch it up for mulch and compost or whatever. You can take the metal and sell it for money. And there's so many construction people that just throw it all in one dumpster, you know? So, but he did that because he was able to think outside of the box and saw an economic opportunity and won. So there may be economic opportunities because we're throwing things away unnecessarily, or things are not getting into one place. We don't have a funnel to channel and direct everything so that people have an easy way to do the right thing. And I think that that's the message, is that we need people to have an easy access to do things the right way. And if we do that, then there won't be as much illegal dumping. There won't be as much irresponsibility at the neighborhood level. And we won't see people abusing our systems because we can do it. Look at bulk trash. Bulk trash is out of control. Like, in terms of what culturally people think they can now do. And the city just picks it up and throws it all away. And I just don't think that that's a good system or culture. Like, I understand that bulk trash is there to provide a service, but it was never intended to be a way that you get rid of your whole roof.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, you could drive around, you could see somebody that's gutted a house and it's all on the sidewalk. It does remind me, I'll just a little anecdote. When I was a kid, and so this would be in the 80s, we were in Maine and we were in Europe. And one of the things I remember really vividly as a kid in Germany, because this was completely foreign to living in America, was there was neighborhood recycling spots mm-hmm. where you would walk your recycling, and there was a bin for green glass and a bin for brown glass and a bin for plastic and a newspaper and cardboard, and you know, of course it's Germany, it's a little different culture, but everybody just did it, right? And mm-hmm. and these were neighborhood stations that you could walk, that were walkable to everybody within the community. Mm-hmm. And then you know, when we were in Maine, of course it was a small town, so it's a bit different, sort of, it's different than a city like Buffalo, but you could take things from that, you know, there was no municipal trash pickup at all. Mm-hmm. So everybody had to go to the dump. There was a private service. If you didn't want to do it, you could pay a private service to come. But most people went to the dump,
right,
as it was called. This was early 80s, and there was guys that worked there, and there was a spot for everything.
Right.
And you could drive through there, and you open up your trunk, and this is where the glass went, and this is where the plastic went, this is where your compost went, like, so they were taking everything that you possibly needed to get rid of, but you, as the resident of this community, were putting it in the spot that it belonged.
Right.
The last thing I want to touch on, and we'll wrap up, is one of my, and you may not have the answer to this, but I think it's something worth getting into, is one of my criticisms of additional fees is that they create their own sort of bureaucratic structure. Mm-hmm. And it's less like the actual fee that I'm worried about, but
right.
What is the structure to maintain that? So the user fee often gets slammed, but who runs it, and what is it like? What's the bureaucracy behind that user fee?
I don't even know. I couldn't even find in the budget where the user fee was accounted for as a revenue source for the city. There's not a specific line. Maybe I overlooked it, but I went through the whole budget a couple weeks ago, and then I went again through it this morning, line by line, trying to identify where the user fee line was. So it's because I'm not sure if it's part of the, if it goes in under the general fund, if it's assigned specifically to these departments, because it makes sense to me that because it is related to sanitation and community, cleanups and streets and all this, that that it would be, you know, directly attributed to those budgets, and then those departments would be accountable for that budget. But it doesn't make sense to me that it's not a direct line item, so that we could see the correlation between the expense of streets and sanitation and disposal and the amount of money that's bringing in. Like, is that generating revenue for the city, the user fee? Because it seems to me that it is. I pay almost as much for my user fee as I do for my taxes. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a very large amount of money. Mm-hmm. And I look at the streets and sanitation budget, and it doesn't seem to me to compute. So I just want some clarity, you know, in terms of where and why, how we come up with this calculus for, because that's what I'm trying to understand. If we're charging this and this is how much it costs, then, and if there's a discrepancy between those two, you know, we need to reconcile that.
Yeah, it should be that in any kind of budget, that should be a very easy thing to figure out.
It should be a very easy thing. And it wasn't clear to me. I obviously can see all the streets and sanitation workers and how many trucks we have on the road and what's costing us and all of that. I can figure out the expense side. I think that there's things that we can do to decrease those expenses just in terms of helping to do some diversion. But again, it's not tweaking around the edges. If you're coming in and saying, well, it's working good enough, and you know, the trash gets regularly picked up, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with average because it really is average. Because what you're talking about, your German experience, right, is way above average.
Yes.
Right? Where people are being very proactive, they're being very involved, they're taking it seriously because they see the correlation between social responsibility and how much they pay each day and the impact on the environment. And I think that part of our challenge is to bring that education and that awareness to people of how their individual behaviors affect how the organism works as a whole. And I think that we disconnected that. We've created a disconnect where people don't feel empowered or feel engaged or in the process of these things that are happening around them. It's the same thing with education.
Well, we're not going to get into education.
We won't. But it's just a metaphor that when we cleared our hands of doing certain things and we put our trash and our recycling out to the street, we forget about it, right? But somebody should be thinking about it. And I think about it a lot. I think about these. I go to the transfer station many times a week. I see the mounds. I know the impact. And I see how much food is in there. And I see how that could be done differently. And it's like, when you have that in the back of your mind, when you have your youth experience from Germany in the back of your mind, or I see it every day, you just ask yourself, how do we do this better? And that has to be where we start the conversation. An acknowledgement that we got to do this better.
Okay. I would agree. And that's so this was a good conversation, and I appreciate your insights. And until next time, thanks again.
Thanks, Jan.